Okay, so now that you watched my bedeckin, I have a very simple question for you.
What wasn't your bedeckin?
It was my, well, who's bedeckin? What does the word bedeckin mean?
Cover.
Oh, now at least I know what that means. What was I doing? Why did I do that? Other than the fact that everybody does that.
You were checking if it's the right
thing. Making sure you were getting the right
very tricked. And when Yaakov Avinu got tricked. Very interesting. That, you know, I thought that too this morning. But when I looked at the at the chumashim, at the sources, so everybody know what he's talking about. That we all know, Yaakov wakes up one next morning and it's not Leah, it's Rachel. Oh, what do you know? It's not Rachel, it's Leah. So that means that the whole night, when he married her, he didn't know who she was.
Did they look alike?
No. The Torah says that they did not look alike.
They didn't have a leopard.
She was, very good, right.
She gave him to her sister.
Right, when did she give the simonim?
Ahead of time, so that she would know.
When?
That day, that is...
What is the only possibility for us to be able to understand how that midrash works? You're right, I always thought that the bedekin was because of Yaakov, because of Rachel, and Leah.
I just saw somewhere that they were actually twins.
But the Torah says that they looked different. The Torah says that Rachel was Yifas Toar and Yifas Merev, very beautiful. And the Torah says that Enei Leah Kehot. But Leah's eyes were soft. Right, well, that's what the midrash says. How is the only possible way that Lavan could pull off this caper and have it make any sense whatsoever?
She was covered all the time, I guess. They were
amazingly
covered. Okay, she was covered all the time. Until when?
Until the next morning. When the sun came up, when he could see her.
Right. So I think that, I'm not entirely sure that they had chuppah of a kedusha, and I don't think Yaakov broke the glass under the chuppah. You should just know, it's very funny. I was an intern in Ravanas. I was working for a man named Rabbi Steven Dworkin. Rabbi Dworkin was the executive director of the RCA. So remember when Steven Spielberg put out that movie on Moshe? And Moshe, Moses, something of Egypt, Prince of Egypt?
Prince of Egypt,
remember? It was an animated film on Moshe. So they called the RCA and they said, we need to fly you out so you can... tell us whether this movie is authentic or not. Right, very good. So, I mean, they didn't really care what he taught me in. But, in the movie, you'll notice that there's a scene where Moshe Rabbeinu gets married to Tzipora. And there's a chuppah, and Moshe is breaking the glass under the chuppah. So Rabbi Dworkin had to explain, the breaking the glass is to remember the temple, which wasn't built and would only be destroyed 1,000 years later. And you know what? They left it in anyway. Why? Because that's what people think. It's Jewish wedding. You break the glass. It's Mazel Tov at the Jewish wedding. All right. So there were, contrary to our popular understanding, I doubt Rachel and Leah had Yaakov had a chuppah. So what was marriage then? How did they get married?
They signed a contract.
Nobody could read and write. Yeah. Jeff, can you turn off the screen? Do you know how to turn off? Press power. Okay?
Prenuptial agreement.
A prenuptial agreement. So how did they marry? How did people marry before Torah, before Kedushin?
The parents decided they were going to...
Good. The parents, that's how they made a shidduch. But how did they get married?
He says, come on, let's go to the tent.
I'm married.
That's exactly right, by the way. That's absolutely correct. They said married. And how do you get divorced? That's right. In Jewish law, by the way, there is a concept of non-Jewish marriage. There has to be a concept of non-Jewish marriage, that non-Jews are commanded to live moral lives. They're commanded not to commit adultery. Now, if they're prohibited from committing adultery, that means you must have marriage, because otherwise you would never have adultery. So how do they get married? When husband and wife live as husband and wife and act as if they're married, then they have the status of marriage. And when they act separated, so Allah considers them separate. So how would they get married? He goes in the tent. She goes in the tent. And they act as husband and wife. There's no chuppah. There's no any of that stuff. Which is, it's against our conception of what happened then. And so, and through the night, then she pretends in the night, it makes sense. There are no candles, pitch black. Right? So remember, what are the simanim? He gave her certain simanim, certain signs. So they were verbal, maybe they were nonverbal. Maybe they were tactile signs. According to some midrashim, Rachel was in the tent that night, and that whenever Yaakov would ask her question, she hid under the bed, and she did that for her sister. That there's a level. Rachel is known as a model of sacrifice. That in order not to in order not to embarrass her sister,
wow,
who would have spent the rest of her life in shame,
wow,
Rachel sacrificed, basically gave her life away. And that Rachel is known as a model of sacrifice. And the Midrash says, goes even so far, you know, remember that Rachel is buried in Kever Rachel. Where's Kever Rachel? Right outside Kiryat, right outside, where is it? In Ephrata, right, Beit Lechem. Why Beit Lechem? So the Midrash says, because when the Jewish people would get kicked out of Israel, out of Yerushalayim, so they went by Kever Rachel. So there's a very famous pasuk, Kol B'Ramah Nishma, Rachel Mevakal Baner. Rachel is crying, Ne'anah Le'inachem. So the very famous midrash, and we read on Tisha B'Av, that Abraham comes to God and says, you have to forgive them, and Yitzchak comes, and Yaakov comes, and nobody could get forgiveness until Rachel comes along and says, what I did, that was over the top. And God says, yeah, it was pretty good. I have to forgive them. Anyway, so then what do we do for Dekin? If it's not Yaakov and Leah slash Rachel, what do we do it for? Why do we do it? Now, by the way, also, why do I know that the guy needs to, that it's not because of Yaakov and Leah, because you have to make sure that it's the right girl. How do I know that it's not, you have to make sure it's the right girl? Let me ask you a question. Let's say she was wearing such a heavy veil. I have a problem with heavy veils, and the reason is this. She was wearing such a heavy veil that you really couldn't tell who it is.
Right.
How can you get married?
Well, could you talk to her before? Did they talk to the bride?
I'm asking you a question.
Well,
if you put a guy here and he puts this big veil over the girl,
yeah,
and you can't see squat, you can't see nothing,
yeah,
right?
Something to say
no, no. But I'm asking you now, modern day. He puts this brick wall veil over her face,
mm-hmm,
okay? And she comes up. Does he see her continuously between now and then?
No.
How tall is she? 5'6"? The slender build, maybe medium. She's the only girl like that, 5'6", slender build. How does he know it's her? All I'm saying is, does he know for sure who it is?
Look, the mother's been standing there.
The mother's standing there. What if the mother wanted we don't have it, but let's say the mother wanted to pull a switcheroo. Right. Could you tell? Honestly, for you see some of these veils, could you tell?
No.
Maybe you could.
Maybe
she would. Maybe she wouldn't.
You
have to know who you're marrying. Yeah, that's halacha. When you marry, it's like anything. If I buy a car from Eddie, and I say, Eddie, I want that Toyota, and it turns out that when we did the deal, Eddie, you know, sold me the Ford, right? So the halacha is that's called a mekach tos. It's a false sale, a sale under false pretenses. It's no good. It doesn't count. So, you know, Yaakov, in the whole Yaakov, you have to know who you're marrying thing. You know, it's a little bit difficult to understand because you have to know who you're marrying when you marry her. Otherwise, you're not really married. So then why do we do the whole veil thing? Very interesting. I'm gonna show you some very interesting things that might surprise you. You never knew before, and you might not. You're going to know now. Go ahead. What? Yeah, it's interesting.
Well,
so
there had to be wedding feasts, right?
There had to be wedding feasts.
Something that said, you know, let's start eating.
What?
There had to be something that happened so that they would know to go start eating. When it was over, they would have married.
What do you mean? Now? Nowadays, we start eating well before the wedding.
Yeah.
You finish telling me after the wedding is over.
It generally a week for the feasting to be over. So, there was a big feast on the wedding night. There had to be some kind of ceremony.
Okay. So the first thing we have to understand is, before we have to do this, I didn't get to it yet, but you need to understand that when you go to a wedding, so what sign, what symbology do we associate most with a Jewish wedding?
Chuppah.
Good. Chuppah. Good. What is a chuppah? The hors d'oeuvres. We're going to get, by the way, we're going to get to the hors d'oeuvres at the end. We're going to get to the hors d'oeuvres. Have anything to the hors d'oeuvres? Did I see this here? No. We're not going to get to the hors d'oeuvres, but yeah, the Tom Amin Hagim has very harsh words about the hors d'oeuvres. Anyway, okay. What is a chuppah? Al yedei hamakadesh shabo Yisrael. It's in the brachos. Al yedei chupa v'kiddushin. Right?
A house or a covering, a place where she learned seven times, a place where the ceremony does.
Well, you said a lot of different things, and they're all correct. They're all right.
She's being transferred from her father's authority to the husband's authority.
Good. So let's look at the Mishnah. Start with the Mishnah. This Mishnah is our earliest source. Really, our earliest source. So the chuppah is not in the Torah. But remember, I told you, there are. Remember, in traditional, in ancient times, even modern times, there are two sections of marriage. There's Erusin and Nisuin. Okay? Erusin is the act of transfer, we'll call it. The act of Kinyan Kedushin. Okay? And how does a woman become married nowadays? What's the Erusin nowadays? Anybody know? What is the Erusin? What is the act of transaction through which a woman becomes married?
The
ring. Not the marriage license.
She accepts.
Not the ketubah.
The
ketubah we're going to talk about next week. Ketubah is the prerequisite document in order to allow the marriage to take place. But it is the ring. Okay? He gives her something that's equal to a pruta, a minimum we're going to see of a pruta, about a dime. Right? Some of minimum value. Okay? And what does she give him back?
Nothing.
No.
She says yes.
Herself. Oh, yes, right. But she through the accepting, by accepting this gift, she gives herself. Does it have to be a ring? No. Could be a French fry.
And it's happening.
It's not worth
a dime. Yeah, well, a cigar band? No, a cigar band is not worth. Is it worth a dime? Probably not.
Well, there is what kind of cigar?
Yes, sir.
Havana cigar.
Well, when I got married, we asked about giving my wife a ring.
Giving your wife a ring?
He said a ring. The husband gives the wife a ring.
Yes.
The rabbi said no.
The Orthodox rabbi?
Rabbi Gordon, yeah.
What did he mean? Why did he say no?
I don't know.
When you married her, what did you give her?
I don't think I gave her anything.
I'm not married.
We asked about that.
Is there somebody else you can ask? I'm quite certain Rabbi Gordon had you give her something. You didn't place a ring on her finger?
I don't think so.
What did you do?
Didn't you say her
ring? I can't remember.
Your wife doesn't have a wedding band?
Not that I gave her the ceremony, no.
No, she didn't. No. Probably what you remember is she wanted to give you a ring.
Oh.
Usually what happens is that in American society, there are what's called double ring ceremonies.
Right.
Right? The husband gives the wife a ring, and then the wife puts the ring on the husband. So in Judaism, it's only the only part of Jewish marriage is that the husband gives the wife to the ring, puts it on her finger. That's the act of kedushin. Right, that's harayat. There was no corresponding. Right. I'm pretty sure what Rabbi Gordon said no to was her giving you a ring. She probably gave you one later. You have a wedding band?
Yeah,
she gave it to you later. That's what I'm... And Rabbi Gordon knew his stuff. I'm pretty sure. what?
He still knows
his stuff. So I'm pretty sure that's how he did it. I'm just guessing without having been there. I wasn't there. Yeah, okay. So says the Torah. Says the Mishnah. La'olam Hebrew Shusha'av. So what happened usually was a father would marry off his daughter. So I'm page number one. Forever, the girl is in the father's possession. Ad shetikanes l'rishus habal l'nisuin, until she enters into the authority of her husband at marriage. Now, what are they arguing about? They're fighting about who has to support her. Right? So the father says, listen, you did the erusin, you did the first part of marriage, you gave her the ring, and then you've gone home for a year. So you're married to her. You pay for support of this young girl, this 12, 13-year-old girl. What do you think I'm marrying her off so young to you anyway for? And the husband says, no. When we do the second part, the nisuin, when we do the marriage, when we finish the marriage, then I have to take care of her. And that's what the Mishnah says. Ashti kanesh l'rishu saba, the nisuin, for nisuin. So you see that term, nisuin, in the Mishnah? That's nisuin. The first part was erusin, and there would be a year in between. The husband would go to the wife's house or her city or wherever she was. They would have a nice little party. He would give her a ring. Harei mekudeshet, you're betrothed to me. And then she's married, but she's not allowed to be with anyone else, even the husband. And he goes home, and she gets ready for a year. That's how they did it. Not entirely sure why they did it that way, but that was their custom. And then, a year later, then he would bring her into his house for nisuin. So what does it say? Look at the kahati, until in the middle. Until she enters the authority of her husband at marriage, i.e., until she is led under the bridal canopy, chuppah, to effect the nisuin marriage with her husband. And that is the quote from Rashi. That's Rashi on the Gemara. All right? Another version of the Mishnah reads, until she enters the chuppah. Okay, so now my only question is, what is the chuppah? What was the chuppah?
That symbolized his home.
Well, yes.
The transfer of the right. support of the...
But I'm asking you, did they always have this canopy that we have here? The answer is no. And it's not clear from Rashi what a chuppah is. What does the word chuppah mean? Anybody know? Lachuf. Anybody know the Hebrew? Dor. Lachuf.
Cover?
Right, to cover means to cover over, to, in the sense of protection. Chuppah means to bring under your protection. Okay, so let's look at the Rambam. Rambam, laws of marriage. Ha'arusha asura lebaala midivrei shofrim. Okay, the arusha, a woman who was betrothed in Averson, is prohibited to her husband, according to the rabbis, kolz man shehi bebeit aviyah, as long as he's in her husband's house. Right? No.
Father's house.
No fooling around. You're an arusa, you're prohibited to everyone, even your husband. If your husband wants to enjoy the benefits of marriage, then what does he have to do?
Take
responsibility. You can't...
Make an honest girl.
That's right, Take responsibility. No, but take responsibility for her, okay? And if a person, if a man would engage in sexual relations with his betrothed in his father-in-law's house, makin oso makas mardus, the rabbis would give him lashes. And one could imagine that that might have happened every now and then, you know, right? Because they're married anyway and whatever, you know, but it's prohibited. Okay? Okay, skip down to that. Okay? Skip down to that.
Lashes doesn't seem like a very harsh punishment.
Why?
In the Torah, do you not get Misa for sleeping with a... Like somebody else's wife?
Yeah, it's your wife.
It's his own wife.
Oh, it's his own wife.
Yeah, oh, if she sleeps with anybody... sleeps with anybody else, what is she?
Yeah.
An adulteress. That's considered. She is married 100% vis-a-vis anyone else. Totally
this
prohibited.
This is talking about her husband.
This is her husband.
Oh. Okay.
She's not. She's prohibited to be with him until he brings her into his house. So now, this, by the way, might be why the rabbi said, you know, maybe we should do it all together. Because this isn't working out so well.
So a couple that gets married and lives in the girl's father's house?
If they got married, no, and they did chuppah as nisuin, then that's fine.
Oh, I see.
Right. But it's, this was intended that the marriage would take place later. I think it was to give the girl time to prepare, to give the boy time to build the house, right, get ready.
The girl to grow up a little.
Girl to go into puberty.
Well, it depends when they married her. It depends when they married her off. I don't know. I think you're being a little too negative about this. You know, there's a lot of okay. What? I'm just going to let that one go. Bet. Okay. Kevan shenichnesha arusha l'chuppah. When this bride enters the chuppah, harezu muteres lavo aleha b'chol eish yircha, he can be with her anytime he wants. Harehi ishto gemura l'chol davar. Okay? And he's his wife for everything. Umisha tikanis l'chuppah, and when she becomes the chuppah, nikreis nisua. Then she's called the nisua, af bishalo nivala, even though they didn't have to live together as husband and wife. Okay? Let's go back up in the middle of Aleph for 1 second. Okay? See the middle of Aleph on page one still. Page one. Okay? He says, what is, afilu in kitcha, that's the third line. Afilu in kitcha bebiya. Even if he married her, one of the ways of marrying her, there are three ways of erisin. It's money, keset, star, he can write her a contract. How's that for romance? You are, you know, married to me? Or bia, or sexual relations. That's the way. That's the way to marry her. Asur lo lavo la bia shnia bebe sabia. He still may not then be with her again in her father's house. Atziyavi osal l'sof beitho. Listen to what the Rambam says. Until he brings her into his house, the yishyached ima. What is yishyached? Be alone with her. The yafrishana lo. And separate her for him. Those three things. Into his house, yichud, and she becomes separated to him. The yichud zeh. This yichud, this aloneness, hu hanikra k'nisha l'chuppah. That's called chuppah. V'hu anikra nisuin b'chol makam. Now, has anybody ever been to a chuppah today? Yeah? Could you call that being alone? Yeah, 400 people, you're really alone.
But then you have the witnesses that they go away.
And now you're starting to understand. Remember, after the wedding, what do they do with you right after the wedding? Stick you in a room. Right? So in the Rambam's time, that wasn't the wedding. What was the wedding? No, God forbid. No. There was no under the chuppah.
There was no chuppah.
They built, it's interesting what they had in many towns, and they had what's called a base chasan, and they built this like home kind of thing in the middle of the city. And the husband and the wife would live in this little, this little hut or whatever for seven brachos. And that's when they would have this whole party in the middle of the town. And so when marriage was, we enter them, this one into the house, and that one goes into the house, and we go see them, and that entering into the home became, that was chuppah. It was yichud, aloneness, separation, and bringing her into his house. Okay, that's a little difficult to do in the Sheridan, downtown Dearborn.
Was the time of the 18th of both? Is that what
you... All at one time. All at one time. So now you know, by the way, why you need yichud. Why do you need yichud? Because without aloneness, there is no marriage. Remember Gordon Stuckey in a room afterwards? Yes, very good. So what's the main? This is going to blow your mind. What's more important according to the Rambam, yichud or the chuppah itself, the canopy with the four poles? Clearly yichud. Clearly, what's the canopy with the four poles?
Pictures.
Right. For the most part, no, it's important. It's not just pictures. You need a symbology of bringing her into his house. It is home. But it's not just that. More important is the yichud, is the aloneness, because when the couple acts as husband and wife, that's what makes them married. Remember, it's not the rabbi says, I now pronounce you husband and wife. Last I checked, no rabbi ever says that. Because the rabbi doesn't have the authority to make you husband and wife. I don't make you husband and wife. Who makes it husband and wife? No, you do. You do, by your actions. By acting as husband and wife. By doing the things you need to do to be husband and wife. Okay? So therefore, that's what chuppah is. Go ahead.
So a common law marriage is just as much a marriage as a marriage.
In Jewish law?
Yeah.
What do you mean common law marriage?
If you have a man...
In Jewish law, if he would take this... He takes the grape, and he says, Hariyam Mekudeshet Li, Mitabat Zu, right, the grape zoo, Gnaz Moshe Yisrael. It better be worth a dime. Okay, it might not be worth a shavar puta, but he's serious. And she's like, okay... And then he brings her into his house. So that, by the way, there's a takana against doing that. The rabbis made a very strong takana against people doing that because you needed a rabbinic framework for people to get married in order to make sure that they do it properly and that it's all in the framework of halacha. Okay.
Yeah, then why every year some yeshiva somewhere does it go on and then they have to decide whether it was right.
Because kids do stupid things. So there's a sakana that you're not supposed to do it.
Right.
Your nephew did it? Did he get married?
No.
Let him off the hook?
No. He was like 14.
Right. There's always, right. I remember when I was in
Yeshiva, same thing.
We were in the pizza store, and one of my friends, I remember who it was, but I remember one of them said, hey, you want to get married? And she said, sure. He said, here, now we're married. And she said, thanks. Stick the little ringy thing, and you put it on her finger. Idiots, right? And they're just playing around, but that's not a joke.
Yeah. They actually, the school I went to,
maybe they
actually,
get.
The final testimony came from his mother of whether, about his maturity, and they ruled that.
they ruled that he's a baby.
No.
Case two, please.
Or
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, that would do it, right? Because you can't play around with that. Because for the guy, it's no problem. Who's it a problem for?
The girl.
Because let's say she wants to marry a Cohen later on. She was previously married. We should teach the girls not to play around. Of course, the boys forget. So I got this nifty book in Baltimore called Nisuin Kehilchasa, which has got just tons of material. So he puts it together. So I'll read it for you. He says, "What is a chuppah? Mahut ha-chuppah. What is a chuppah?" The mahut ha-chuppah she'oseh ha-nisuin. The essence, what is a chuppah? Nechleku ha-rishonim. The rishonim, which are the rabbis in the medieval times, and before a little and after, they argued about it. The kama shitos v'davar. He says, I'll give you six opinions about what the chuppah was. There are six opinions. You think, what's a chuppah? It's a little canopy. No, there were six opinions. And you're going to recognize some of these. What? Shita Rishara Mahuta Chuppah, what is it? Siyavi Ha'ish et Ha'isha V'toch Beito, that the man should bring the woman into his home. V'yityached Ima, and he should be alone with her. V'yafrishena lo. What does that sound like? Does that sound like anyone? Sounds like Rambam. That's what Rambam says. V'dei azu pirsha achronim, the achronim said, she'chuppah tzricha snei dvar. The chuppah requires two things. One, hava'a lebeito, bringing into his home, and two, hityachdut bebeito, being alone in his house. Now, by the way, so our chuppah, is there an aloneness there in our chuppah? No. Right? Is it his home?
No.
Not by a long shot.
Yeah, it has to be. So how do we accomplish that?
The chuppah, no.
They rent the hall in his name.
Whoops.
Sure. One of the things we do is you rent the hall in the name of the chassan, because
we have to call them.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Because remember all you're married. Trust me. Because these are. Oh. Don't talk to me. Because. One second. Oh, and more. If he didn't separate her, he brought her into his house for a moment. And let's say he brought her in, and then he sent her home. Go back to your father. Ein zu chuppah. No chuppah, right? Zion, number Zion. Shita Shmiya, number two. Mahut ha-chuppah. What is it? Yichud ha-chazan im ha-karla l'shem nisuin. Right? Being alone. Ve'ein tzarech shi'avienu ha-chazan l'sof beiso. So according to those opinions, even if Scott and Lisa didn't rent the hall in their name, that's still aloneness. The aloneness for the sake of marriage is enough. So they're still good. Okay. Os Chesra says, number three, Mahut ha-chuppah. Shiyavi ha-ish et ha-isha l'toch beito. He must bring her into his home. Af al-pi she'eno mishyached ima. Even though he's not alone with her. So what's our canopy? Take our canopy. That's what it is. Meaning that you ever see sometimes the groom will go out and greet the bride and sort of escort her into the chuppah, under the chuppah. It's symbolic of his home, that he's now bringing her into his home. It's a very intimate, private thing, to be brutally honest with you, in front of your 400 closest friends, but what can you do? Okay? He says, from Shukain, the maiden, the Akasa, we learn it from the verse, V'im beit isha nidara, if the house of her husband, she swears, she takes an oath on the house of her husband, Shekol shehi bebeit isha, as long as she's in the house of her husband, harehi birshuto, she is in his possession. V'zeu lashon chuppah, what is the language of chuppah? Shechofe oto hachatan, that the chasan covers her over, v'nichneset lebeito, and she enters into his house. Skip to number tes, shita revius, number four. Mahut hachuppah, makom miyuchad, an alone place, shemivir et hachasan v'asakalo l'shem nisuin, a designated place that they bring the chasan, afapishna eina mishyachnim sham yichud gamar, even though they're not totally alone. So they don't have to be totally alone, but they go to this room, and this is the room that symbolizes your marriage. Okay? Number five. Look, it's Oth Yud. Number Yud. Shita Chamishis, the fifth version. Mahus HaChuppah. Sudar Otalis, it's a, maybe you've seen this, yes, I've seen.
Yeah.
Right? It's a cloak or a garment. Sheminichem al Rosham shel hachasan v'shel hakala v'shash birchos nesuin. Anybody ever been to a wedding where the rabbi puts a talis over both? Yaki weddings do this.
Yeah, the German.
The German weddings do this. You take the chasan to kala, you put a talis literally over both of them. Okay? And we're just pretending. No. Okay? Put a talis over both of them. I've seen this at weddings, even nowadays, that they wear a chasan. And I thought it was strange. But then you learn this and you realize, no, there are opinions that say that's chuppah. Because they now
are
enclosed together. Very lovely. Number.
I saw that in. They were under the chuppah with the talis around.
What?
Under the chuppah.
Yeah. Right. So we try at weddings, we try to fulfill as many of these opinions as we possibly can. Why not?
Because there are other people under the chuppah. They're not alone.
Right. They're not alone. Right. There's no. They're going to do yichud. Right. They're going to be alone. They're going to have a designated place. Hopefully, it's his hall. You know, all that kind of stuff. So one of the other things is that some rabbis will do this. I mean, it's not our minhag, but it's a yeki minhag for this reason. The get number six, Yud Aleph, Shita Shishis. Okay? Mahut HaChuppah, what is it? Mishiyatsa HaBetula Bihinuma, when the virgin bride goes out in her Hinuma. What's a Hinuma? Lahut she'if she'al rosha. It is a veil on her head. Mishorbab al eineha, covering over her eyes. Va'ayidei she'achashan mechase rosha. And through the fact that the husband, the chashan, covers her head, hu poresh kinafav aleha. He spreads his wings over her. Ukamosha amra Rut leboaz, and Rut said to Boaz, ufarafta kinafecha al amatecha. You shall spread your wings over your maidservant. So, what is spreading wings over the maidservant? What's considered ufros kinafecha? When the husband takes the veil and places it over his wife. What do we call that?
Bedekin.
It's not bedekin. According to an opinion we're about to see, that's chuppah. It's not, that ain't no photo op. Right? That's an act of, when you do that, when you cover someone over, it's an act of covering. An act of, in a sense, bringing someone in into your domain, however you want to say it, into your life. I mean, it is, by the way. If you think about it, it's a very, again, intimate kind of act
because
to do that.
You could have a shliach do it.
One second. The so the question is, right? If someone, if the chassan has to do it himself or others can do it, right? Then you have to look later on. But if you want it to be chuppah, we're going to see. If you want it to count for chuppah, the chassan himself must do it. Right? If the chassan doesn't do it, then it's not chuppah. So what opinion is this? So let's first look at the page. Skip now page 3 in the bottom. All the way back, biblical times. Yes. Chuppah was clearly this bringing into the home. This is pre-biblical. How else would you get married? So Kedushin, so the rabbis required not just Kedushin, they required not just Nisuin, bringing the home, but Averson. Harea Mikudeshatli. Kedushin. Right. That Kedushin is an elevation, sanctity. But Nisuin is done with the brachos. First we make the brachos, we elevate it with the blessings, and then it's an act. You know, that's an act of marriage. So it says the Tosfos. Okay, this is the Tosfos in Yuma 13b. Because it's a little strange to think the chuppah is the bedekin is the chuppah. Right? But you should just know, I'll just tell you, that rabbis who are extremely meticulous, extra meticulous, they will tell, I don't know, maybe this is your wedding, they will tell the Eidei Kedushin to also, they will set aside Eidim to witness the bedekin. I've seen this. That the Eidim are witnessing the Bedekin. Why do you have witnesses for the Bedekin? Because if the Bedekin is Chuppah, then you need to have witnesses for the Chuppah, to the exclusion of all others. And the husband and the wife need to know what the Bedekin is, what they're getting into themselves into.
Do you have to have people actually appointed to be Eidim?
Yes.
Or just you have kosher people there?
No, no.
It's all women crowd around anyway, they're not kosher.
Correct. One of the big problems in Eidim, you should just know, and there's a big one of these big questions that comes up. So you'll get up now, and nowadays at modern weddings they'll say, the witnesses are Eddie Katz and Dennis Jasinski. You're not related to each other, right? No, right? And to the exclusion of all others. Why do we say to the exclusion of all others? Here's the problem. Let's say, to be kosher witnesses, not only do you have to be an observant Jew and male, you must also, what?
Over 13. You can't be deaf or blind,
right? Right, you can't be deaf or blind. And you can also not be related to the other witness. Okay? So now, the question is, let's say...
You're related to one of the people you're witnessing? Like,
no,
be a sibling?
No. You must not. You can't be related. So now, let's say... So I'm standing next to Dennis at his, son's wedding. Very nice. And he designates two witnesses, or he doesn't designate them. Dennis also saw the wedding. So now he is an aide, he's a witness, but he's puzzled. Why? Because he's a relative. So according to some opinions, if I don't designate that Dennis is not a witness, he could enter into the whole witness thing, right, and muck up the whole thing. So that's why we designate witnesses, so that they are the witnesses and that nobody else is a witness, to exclude the exclusion of all others. So anybody else who would not be a kosher witness is not a witness, even though he saw the event take place. Okay? Understand that? A little technical. Tosfos Yuma 13b. Amar Rav Chanina. This is the middle of the Tosfos. The bottom of page 3. Hadad Amridad, which we said, Halein Dekanshin Armelin, right? Those who marry Armelin, women who are widows, Tzarech Lekonsa Mibeod Yom, The custom always was to get married on Friday. Why did you get married on Friday?
I don't know, but I got married on Friday.
Why?
Because Elena...
Because everybody was off Friday night. Who had Sunday? What was, you know what Sunday was? The beginning of the work week. Who had time? In the middle of the week. They had a wedding on a Tuesday night. First of all, night. When would you get married? You couldn't get married at night. It was dark. Right. Imagine, can you imagine what, how many candles you would need to light a wedding hall? Who had that kind of money? So they got married during the day. What's the only day they really get married? Usually? Friday. You get married Friday before Shabbos. Everybody's going to have a meal tonight anyway. Might as well have a nice Shabbos meal. Wonderful. Okay, there's only one problem. The problem is, how do you make a kinyan on Shabbos? How do you make, remember, weddings are an acquisition. Are you allowed to make a sale on Shabbos? No, no kinyan on Shabbos. So what do you do? So he says, those armelin, these people that marry widows, tzarech lekomsa mi ba'od yom. He has to marry her, he has to bring her into the chuppah, into the canopy, into whatever it was, when it's still daylight. Why?
Why would it just be for a widow?
We'll see. He's explaining. Shelo yehei kikona b'Shabbos. So that you don't acquire her, this woman, on Shabbos. He says, I don't know, what in the world is going on? That's Rebecca's question. Why just a widow? Nirali the farish. I want to explain. Besula sheyesh la chuppah b'od yom. Okay, besula, where there's a chuppah during the day. Nisha shenichnasa l'chuppah, when she enters the chuppah, kina'a l'chol davar. Then she becomes his wife for everything. L'hachi mutar lavoa le'a b'Shabbos. That's why you can marry her, be with her on Shabbos. Aval almana she'en la chuppah. Okay, but an almana, a widow, did not have chuppah. Seems that they did not have chuppah for widows. Ve'ena niknis l'vala li'yorsha. And the husband has not become her husband for inheritance. And to become impure for her if he's a kohen, and to negate her vows. Ela al yedei bia, rather through marital relations. Sharach lavo alera mi ba'od yom. He must be with her during the day. Shelo ye kikona kinyan b'Shabbos. Okay? He says, v'afilu. I'm on the beginning of the four lines on the bottom. In Tim Shalomar, if you would say, sheyesh la'alman ha'chupa kohen l'bia, so apparently in the France where the Baal Tosfot lived, marrying a widow was much, much less significant than marrying a basula, marrying an unmarried girl. Marrying a girl, party, chuppah, very nice. You marry a widow, shkoyach, we wish you the best. You know? So, and that's where they did it. They didn't even have chuppah, apparently, for marrying a widow. They became common law husband and wife. They did kiddushin, and they said, okay. Come, yeah. We'll talk about it in the proper time. I don't want to go off topic. Okay? Some say, most rabbis say yes. Some say there's an issue of not having children at weddings of their parents to other people, but it doesn't bother me so much. But But Aviva, you're right about one thing. It should happen soon. Okay. Even if there's an amana has a chuppah, nearly the yichud shimat ichemitacheret imo haynu chuppasa. They did not have a canopy. They did not have a whole celebration. They had yichud, and that was it. V'zeh yeshvasos kodem Shabbos, and that they should do before Shabbos. But here's the important words: aval besula, but a virgin, meaning an unmarried woman, mishiyata behinuma, when she goes out in her veil, havi chuppah shela. That's what he says. That's her chuppah. When you put the veil on her, that was chuppah. Bezeh you were given lashos bayom. And that what they would do during the day. Meaning, when would she wear the veil? They put the veil on her Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. They do the veil. They would make the brachas. Fine. Avalo yumiyachdin ala balayla shamach labia. But they wouldn't be alone together until the nighttime. They wouldn't have yichud right after the wedding ceremony. They would have a party. They would have a Friday night dinner. They would say goodnight. But it was already nighttime, so Rebecca, the answer to your question is, what's the difference between an almana, a widow, and an unmarried woman? The unmarried woman wore a veil. For the almana, everybody agreed, did not wear a veil. And according to the Baal Eit Tosafot, the veil was what? What do we call it? Chuppah. So now, why do we do bedekin? If it was just Rachel and Leah, blah, 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 very nice, lovely. I'm not sure we would do it nowadays. I mean, it's to be honest with you, it's a little weird. Plus, if it was Rachel and Leah, we would make sure that it would not be see-through. But rather, most veils see right through it. I'm not sure why the firmer the wedding, the more unseasonable it has to be. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
They can't,
she can't see anything.
Our niece had to be guided. She couldn't see.
I'll show you in a second. I'll show you another reason. Okay? Right? And how do you know that? Because the Mishnah right above there says, let's say, how do I know that almanos did not wear, that widows did not wear veils? Let's say they're getting a divorce. And there was no ksuba. So the rabbis said that in those situations where they got married and I guess they couldn't read or write or didn't have a person who could read or write around them. So now they have an argument. Because remember, a widow, how much does a besula, a non-married woman, get in her ksuba? Anybody know? How much does she get?
400.
200, whatever. So we're going to find out soon, next week. How much does an almana get?
Nothing.
No, she gets 100. Okay? So now, they're getting a divorce. So what does she say? She comes back and says, I was unmarried, right? I want 200. And of course, what does the husband say? He can't stand her. Right? They hate each other now. Married, I'm married. You were a widow. I was nice enough to marry you, and now you're trying to rip me off twice? Okay? Wait. Sorry. Divorce usually is that way. Okay. So what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says, "In yesh edim shiyatzas behinuma." If I have witnesses, so the rabbis do a bit of dirt there. They go ask questions. So tell me, you remember the wedding? Oh, their wedding. They had the little hot dogs. It was great. Okay. What was she wearing? Oh, shit, it's a nice big veil. She looked lovely. Then shubasa masayim. She gets 200, right? But if not, what was she wearing? She had a hat. No. Oh, sorry, 100.
We're relying on rabbis to remember that maybe 10 years ago she was...
Not rabbis, Aiden witnesses.
Okay, but they're men. No, seriously.
I know. She remembers she's wearing a veil or not.
Yeah.
You should just know. The videos are very important. I've heard of cases where it, Lo Alein, it was a terrible thing. A woman gets married, and by a reform rabbi, very nice, lovely wedding, and then she gets a civil divorce, remarries, and has children
without a get.
Yeah. Right? Unfortunately, that's a situation of possible mamzerut. So rabbis will bend over backwards.
Oh, if you could find out that they weren't really married.
Right. Bend over backwards to figure out a way that they weren't married. So one way to figure out that they weren't married is if there were no kosher witnesses. So I've heard of cases where the rabbi will say, bring me the video. Mm-hmm. And they will scour the video to make sure that nobody at the wedding, not two people who could see the actual ceremony, were a kosher witnesses. And, you know, I think videos it can be a life-saving thing to have that video. Terrible thing, but it can be life-saving. Okay, skip back to page 2, please. Page 2. This is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says the following. So interesting. So now we're getting the one reason we learned why you have this veil, why you have the bedekin is because it's chuppah, and that is reason A1. Without which, I'm not sure we would do it. So interesting. You know, it's interesting. By the way, chuppah. If you notice, my chuppah was like very lively. Right, but throughout history, when you read some of the sources, they did it very differently. If you've ever been to a Lubavitch wedding, there's a niggle.
It's like a funeral dirge.
That's very solemn.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, how's your chuppah? Is your chuppah with dancing and singing, or is your chuppah very solemn?
No, it was very lively.
Your chuppah?
My chuppah?
Yeah.
The bedecking
chuppah? No, the chuppah. were they going crazy and dancing during the chuppah?
Oh, no.
Right. So who's right and who's wrong? You understand what I'm saying? So if it's chuppah, like this halachic source that we just saw, then it's very serious and solemn. It's nice, but serious and solemn. You know, and meaningful. I've had friends, I wasn't at the wedding. Not such good friends, I guess. But at the wedding, you know how we sing Nim Komcha Malkeinu, in the morning of Shabbos? Nim Komcha Malkeinu. So they wanted that song sung by all their friends during the bedecking. And so all of them sang the nigun. They were, nine, and they said it was very beautiful. Everyone, it's just a different kind of flavor. Mm-hmm. And you'd understand why.
What's somebody's obligation if you're at a wedding and there's not two Orthodox witnesses?
I would stay away, personally. If I was there.
Not you, me.
If I was there, I'm telling you, if I was there, not the rabbi. I was just invited as a guest.
Yes.
And I knew that it was not a kosher wedding and that these people weren't, I would go, but I would make sure not to watch the ceremony. Not to be, I would sit far enough that I could, you know, I don't know what's going on. You understand what I'm saying? Because these people, I want them to be married Jewishly, but if, God forbid, there was ever a problem, there would be no benefit to my having been a witness at the wedding. You know, God willing, they should be married and be happy and have wonderful children. It should be great. And if they get divorced, they should give a get according to halacha. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there's a great, great possibility that they will get divorced. And there's a great, great possibility that they will not give a proper get. So I don't have any part of it. I would stay away from the ceremony.
If they don't want to be involved, they have to be.
No, no, not that I don't want to be involved, because my participation or involvement as a just watching it,
yes,
could be detrimental to them later on.
Because it
legitimizes it.
Because of what?
Because it legitimizes it.
Uh-huh, right.
By definition.
Even if they're married in a Reform ceremony,
yeah,
and the man and woman are both Jews,
right,
aren't they still married because it's the...
This is, by the way, this is a huge, huge debate. And just to tell you, a huge debate between modern-day poskim. So this case obviously came up quite a bit in America, quite a bit, with the development of conservative and Reform weddings that were not... used to be historically... Who married you? Like in Israel today. You want to get married, you have to go to the rabbinut. The rabbinut is controlled by the Orthodox rabbinate. So you want to get married, you go to the Orthodox rabbinate. So now that has problems, it has abuses. There's a guy, you know, in Israel called, his name is Rabbi Seth Farber. He created an organization called Etim. Etim means times, meaning life cycle events. And this, the goal of Etim is to train rabbis to do these things for nothing, for free. Because what happens is, you know, it's a good moneymaker for the rabbis, and so it really became very, to a large degree, it's very slimy. You know, when you have to, when you're a hired gun, it's not so nice. So this organization, Etim, will match up couples and rabbis for funerals and births and weddings and all the kinds of nice stuff. And even Rabbi Shafra has done a number of weddings for this organization, Etim. Should ask him to come in and explain it maybe another time. So it used to be you wanted to get married. It was a rabbi, and it was an Orthodox rabbi. At least in Europe, it was always, you know, in America, especially with the promulgation of conservative and Reform ideology, you had all these issues, and you had people not giving gittin. So along came Moshe Feinstein, who wrote an extensive tshuva, a very, very long tshuva, and he said, very controversially, that even though the husband and wife, knew the best husband and wife, and everybody knows they're married, and they treat them as married, and all that stuff, if it's not a kosher kedushin, we can treat it as if they were not married. And why do Moshe say this?
As far as divorce goes?
Yeah, why did he say this? To prevent their children from being mamzerim. It was a tremendous, I mean, I cannot stress to you how great the leniency it was. Along came a man named Rav Hertel Henkin, I don't know what his first name is. Rav Henkin was a great rabbi, also living in Brooklyn at the time, and ripped Rav Moshe to shreds. I mean, Rav Moshe is very tenuous from the sources. Because a lot of the sources talk about, yeah, I know they should get married with a kosher rabbi, and they should blah, blah, blah. But if they act like husband and wife, and they choose each other like husband and wife, and they live together for 10 years, you know, if it looks like it, and smells like it, and tastes like it, it's what it is. But Rav Moshe became the accepted normative authority position. It was accepted halacha, probably because he was the more lenient one. Even though, source-wise, Rav Henkin had more legs to stand on. And that's why, that's the way we go today. Rav Moshe was a giant. Literally a giant in halacha. Very small man, very big shoulders. And he would bend over backwards, if he could, to help somebody, to save a life, he would bend over backwards halachically. Sometimes he couldn't do something. There was always limits. But that was the greatness of Rav Moshe. So that's why you asked me, I always tell people, go, I personally feel, some people would say you shouldn't go to a wedding if it's not a kosher wedding. I tell people that if a Jew's marrying a Jew nowadays, that's a cause for celebration. You know, and that's the world in which we live. And if they invite you, go. But don't participate. You know, I wouldn't walk down, I wouldn't take a bracha, don't just go and be happy. And I think it prevents a lot of problems later on. Okay, says Erev Shulchan Aruch. When you get married, you have to know that the thing you're giving the person is worth a pruta. So if somebody marries somebody with one of these grapes, so if you bought the grape at Westbourne, you know, when they're $8 a pound. Yeah, those grapes are expensive. If you bought it at Meyer's and it's like a week old already, the grape is kind of wilting, worth a dime, that's not so good. Okay?
One stop.
What?
It's one stop.
I bought it at one stop.
Oh, good.
Yeshomim says this is the Ramah in the Shulchan, this is a Shulchan Aruch. Let's say you got married, and you don't know how much it's worth. Meaning, the problem is, if the woman, if he says, I'm going to marry you with this $1,000 ring. And she says, $1,000 ring, I'll go for that. And it's really worth $10. So is it worth a pruta? Yes. But if he misled her, then she was, remember, married under false pretenses, and then wedding is no good. So remember, when you got married, what did the rabbi tell you? What did the rabbi tell you to bring? Plain gold band. No rocks. Why? Because rocks are very difficult to evaluate. So she sees rocks, she sees, oh, he spent $5,000 on me. She didn't know that you went to National Diamond Liquidators and got it for $57. So, you know, right, she doesn't know clarity, cut, it's all blemish. She doesn't know that. So that's why no stones. We have a minute of no stones. So let's say, yesh omim. She'im kitcha b'davar she'im b'kiyim b'shumasam. Let's say that he married her with something that it's not, nobody knows how much it's worth. Upa'amim tovim b'ham harbei k'gon avanim tovos and margalios. Sometimes they're really good, like stones and diamonds. So he says, marry me with this stone that's worth 50 zuz. 50 whatever. Ukiyot and tsarich shuma. Then you have to have it evaluated. Delo sam chadaita. To make sure that she didn't intend one or another. Yesh omin. Some say, Rafilu kitcha the evan stam. Even if he married her with a rock, velo amar la shashava nun zuz. And he didn't say how much it's worth. Tsricha shuma. And you have to have it evaluated. Ulakach, for this reason, nagu lakadesh v'tabat she'ein ba'eben. Our custom is, when you married your wife, I'm sure Rabbi Gordon said, plain gold band. Right? Right? That's from the Shulchan Aruch. Coming back. Yeah, right. Plain gold band. That's why in Judaism, that's why, by the way, everyone has an engagement ring, and then they have a wedding band. Where'd that come from? You know where it came from? Rabbi Cairo in the Shulchan Aruch, from the Talmud. Right? Why would you have two rings? Why would non-Jews have two rings? Because the Jews do. Okay. Hagat, says the Ramah. The im kitcha b'tabat sheyesh evan. So what did they marry? He married her with a ring, with a rock. Oh, b'stam tabat, or with another ring. V'nim sashom l'choses. Turns out he didn't marry her with a gold ring, it was a copper ring. What do you mean so?
You can't marry her with a copper ring.
You could, if what?
You tell her it's a copper.
If she knows it's copper. Even though we don't really marry with copper, chashin and the kedushin. Okay? Then we're afraid it's kedushin. Then we say it's the married. Even if the witness is on the chuppah, say it's zahav, it's gold. It turns out it's not. It's copper. Even though according to the din halacha, nira de lo havi mikudeses are not married. Afilu hachi yesh lahachem the inyan maisa. Really, we should be stringent and say, we're going to make them do it again, but they're going to have to teach each other. But she can't back out. Well, I changed my mind. This skin flint, you know, swapped me for a gold ring with a whatever. Nonetheless, noagim tachas ha-chuppah. Under the chuppah, the custom is, lisol le'edim im ha-tabat shavet pruta. That's what the rabbi will say, and this happens at all your weddings. We'll take the edim and say, does this look like it's worth a pruta? And the edim will say, oh, rabbi, yes it does. Okay. Why? So that the kala will know, doesn't matter how much it's worth, this ring is worth a dime. Right? That's the minimum value. Is it worth a dime? Yes. So she knows, and that's what she's going for. Gam, no again, look what it says. They also have the custom, l'chashos p'nei hakalos hatsinuos, to cover over the faces of the kalos hatsinuos. The, what's the word?
Modest
kalos, the inner makpidos b'mame kadeshosan. So why do they cover over her face so she can't see anything? It's not Rachel Leah. It's not like, you know, husband, wife, I don't know who it is. So she shows the world, I don't care how much it's worth, I just want to marry him.
Wow.
That's in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, and that's why the kalos hatsinuos, the thicker it is, the more you can't see. So we learned at the very beginning. We have to stop here because I'm out of time. We'll end the very beginning. Not about Rachel and Leah. Sorry. What's it about? Either it's chuppah, or it's so that she will show that she doesn't care how much the thing is worth. Okay, there's one other reason. Look on page 4. I can read it to you. Okay? Here we are. This is really going to blow your mind. Okay? Tough. Okay. Tough kuf nun. This is the tamei haminhagim. Tamei haminhagim is why do we have certain customs? Tam, okay, leha dektich from the word dektich, bedekin. Okay, shachasim chasa kala, the chasim covers the kala. Kodem achupa al shem vakitach hatsheif vakitkash. And she took the veil and she covered herself. Who did it? Who did?
Rivka
did it. Not Rachel and Leah. When Rivka saw Yitzchak's over there, she said, "Is that my husband?" "Yes, it is." Let's get married. And so we do it as a custom to remember her. Top kuf nun days, which is 952. Why do we do it? Mishum she'echad min haklalos shenitkala la ha'isha. Right? One of the curses that the woman was cursed with, via Misha Laolam, because she brought death to the world, she should enter marriage like a person in mourning. Sorry, I'm breaking all the taboos here. That's what it says in the Talmud HaMenachem. So I and Yaakov are reading Parshas Bereishis. So if you want to ignore that reason and you want to say no, it's because this woman is such a tzedua and she doesn't care how much her husband is paying her. Even better, and if you want to say that she's even better, that's part of the wedding, it's part of the marriage, it's part of chuppah, how much more the better. But at least now you know what is the bedekin. Have a good week, everybody.